The following audio is from Cornerstone Church. More information about Cornerstone Church is available at www.cornerstonefsm.church.
I want you to think of your favorite Christmas movie right now, all right? And on the count of three, we're just going to all say it together. Ready? One, two, three. Home Alone. So obviously, Home Alone is the greatest Christmas movie of all time. Thank you for realizing that and agreeing to that. I love the opening scene of Home Alone. If you don't know about Home Alone, this was very important to my childhood. I can remember watching this with my mom and cracking up a lot and just every year putting in that VHS tape. Yes, that's how old I am, is going back to the VHS and actually had the like sleeve that it fit into. And so it's like you had to, you know, make sure you did that and then you take it out. So it's like almost like a sacred thing. Every year to open up Home Alone. And I love the opening scene of Home Alone because Home Alone is just crazy. It's a crazy start to the Christmas experience. Like Christmas Eve is coming and Christmas is just around the corner, and they are scheduled, the McAllister family is scheduled to go to Paris, and the night before they're going to leave, everybody's packing, they've got extended family in. There's about 14 of them in this huge house in Chicago, and it's just going crazy. And I love how the movie just kind of shows all that, just going chaotic. You've got the thief, Joe Pesci, who dresses up like a police officer and just wants to know what's going on with the family and if they're going to be in town or not. And he's just realizing the chaos of it all, the hustle, the bustle. Then you've got the guy from Little Nero's, right? It's not Little Caesars, it's Little Nero's for them. And he needs $122.50 for the pizzas that he brought. And they sit there and they wait at the front door, and all this craziness is going on with this family. Even the dad, who's sort of supposed to be taking care of everything, he ditches out on paying for the pizza. And then finally, the mom, who thinks she's got everything under control, she comes, she pays the $122.50 plus a tip. The pizza guy leaves. Joe Pesci knows, okay, they're going to be out of town, and this house is for the taking. Except the whole point of the movie is that one of the family gets left behind, Kevin McAllister, and the rest is history in the movie. It's a great movie. But it shows like the hustle and the bustle of Christmas time. No offense to my wife, and I'm going to say this, like, she gets a little crazy when it comes like Christmas season. It's like October, are we ready to pull out the Christmas stuff yet? And I'm like, no, not yet. As soon as November hits, are we going to get the Christmas tree? We haven't even finished stuffing our faces with turkey and stuffing. She's like, Christmas tree, Christmas tree, Christmas tree, Christmas tree. And then they're shopping. And, you know, by that time, 107.9 on the radio has already been playing Christmas music by, like, 2 weeks, right? Christmas movies are already showing up, streaming on your cable, on your streaming TV service. So, I mean, the whole culture is kind of, like, advancing this big push for the hustle and bustle of Christmas. And so these three words, Christmas is coming, man, those are some of the best words that some people love to hear. They love to hear that Christmas is coming, especially kiddos. They are so excited, right? Like Christmas gifts, Christmas morning, traditions, all these festivities and things like that. Well, the honest truth is not all people are really excited about Christmas. In the hustle and bustle that we see, we even see in that Home Alone movie that eventually, like, we have to get honest about the hardship that sometimes the holidays can bring. There are potentially hard stories or dark memories or harsh realities that set in from years past. I know of many, many children this Christmas who will not be excited. In fact, they will be very hurt. I know families will be very emotionally drowned because of the holidays. I know there will be people, as we prayed for the homeless, they'll be alone. And so even though we know Christmas is coming, it can be somewhat hard. That is why our church decided to enter into this Advent season. Now, we're not going to go like the full, all 100, all in Advent where we're lighting candles, we're seeing wreaths, we're explaining all those candles. Some of that really is tradition. But what we are going to do is we're going to take that word Adventus from Latin that means coming or arrival. And we are going to focus in. We're going to take a dedicated season to focus in on what was coming at Christmas. Advent started, if you didn't know this, it started somewhere between the 5th and 6th century, where people were setting aside time. They were setting aside time for the Feast of Epiphany, that they were setting aside time for new baptized believers, that there was like a celebration that was coming. And so they were setting aside time. This is similar to Lent when it comes to Easter. They were going to focus and prepare for something significant. And so over time, they started talking about how light was piercing the darkness. You know, when there's a new life coming out of death, you get this metaphor of light. And so over time, people started connecting the calendar to these traditions, and you saw the winter solstice, the darkest time of the year, become the part where they would honor the sort of light breaking through. Thus, we have Christmas. We have this Advent season. Very generally speaking, something was coming. People were preparing for this coming. But Advent also focused on the second coming of Christ. So it wasn't just the coming of his birth, it was the coming of his reign and his return. And so there's this sort of a dual purpose of Advent season where we are looking forward, yes, to that baby who is to come, but we're also looking forward to the coming of Jesus as king and his return. That's what Advent means. These candles illustrating light piercing into that darkness. Really meant to focus, anticipate, prepare for Christ. Honestly, it includes not only his birth, his return, but also his death. So in other words, Christmas really is about the gospel coming, a dedicated season for preparing for the gospel. And I kind of like this because I hope that Christmas isn't really that different for Cornerstone, that we are a gospel people all year round, that we are anticipating the coming of Christ, that we are living in light of the gospel. We just happen to put up some trees and some wreaths and celebrate some traditions. But for us, this seems pretty normal for us. In fact, what I'm going to say today, I bet will probably not seem very Christmas-like. In fact, it'll seem very normal for us, and I'm glad for that. What is this thrill of hope? What are the glad tidings? What's the good news of great joy? That's where we're going in this Advent season. Hebrews 11:1 says, "Now faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen." That we are here to anticipate in faith that which we have hoped for. We are assured of this that we have hoped for, that it is coming, that it has come, and the conviction of what is not seen. That the one who was prophesied about in the Old Testament, moving forward in the New Testament, has come. That there really was a light, there really were shepherds, there really was this teenage girl and her betrothed-to-be husband, and there was a baby that was born in a dirty cow trough. As we sang earlier, this first song, and we're probably going to sing it a lot this Christmas, "Let every heart prepare him room." That's what we're doing at Advent. So if you have a phone and you want to follow along with our Bible event, it's in the YouVersion Bible app, I would encourage you to do that. I'm going to talk about these three words today. Prepare him room. This is Jesus Christ we're talking about. He's already been born in a dirty cow trough. He already lived a sinless life. He's already died paying the penalty of death to appease the wrath of a holy God. And this Jesus has risen bodily in heaven. We believe that, the tomb is empty, right? That it's not just sort of the spirit of Jesus. It is the bodily form of resurrected, glorified Jesus sitting at the right hand of the Father. And that one day he will return to us. This is the Jesus we're talking about. So I just had to ask this question. Why would we prepare him room? He doesn't need any room. He's got paradise. He's got the kingdom, right? He doesn't need that. Why prepare him room? Because there is not a day that goes by where we don't need the gospel in our lives. And that his imminent return could be at any moment. That's why we prepare him room. You prepare room for your most valued guests. And so Christmas is our version of this focused season to experience the goodness and kindness of Jesus as we prepare our hearts, our sick, dirty, deceitful hearts that the Bible tells us are. And I'll bring that up in just a second. We are preparing him room because of who he is and what he's done and what he is going to do in the future. Don't miss it in the hustle and bustle of the holiday season. Reality and the past history of the first century has told us that it is possible to not prepare him room, right? In fact, isn't that why he was in a cow trough? There was no room for him. So we have to make a activated advance towards being prepared for him. As we make our way personally, maybe with family, with friends, with our church through this season, here's the big idea I want to give to you. It's a very simple statement. Make room for Jesus this Christmas. Yes, that is a command. It is a request. It is me saying the best thing you could do this Christmas, if Christmas is awesome for you or if Christmas stinks for you, if Christmas is full of gladness and joy or if Christmas is full of sadness, make room for Jesus. So I want to figure out, how do we do that? How do we make room for Jesus? And I want to focus on these three words: prepare him room. First of all, prepare. What does this mean to prepare? And I want you to turn with me, or you can see it up here on the screen, Isaiah 11. So we're going to go back to some prophecy in Isaiah, and we're going to look at Isaiah 11, 1 through 4. We are going to, and prepare means we are going to consider what has been said. We're going to consider what has happened. We're going to consider what has changed. And we must consider what it means for us. That's what prepared means. So let's just read this prophecy together, and there'll be some follow-up scriptures. There shall come forth a shoot from the stump of Jesse. Interesting. That's not like normal language, it sounds like. But who is Jesse? Jesse was the father of David. David, known as the greatest king in Israel's history. A man after God's own heart, that even genealogies speak of King David before they speak of other kings. Even though David wasn't the first king, David is the king of preeminence. And yet there is one who will come who will have the throne of David. So when we're talking of Jesse, there is going to be someone in the line of Jesse or from this tree of Jesse, someone here, and a branch from his roots shall bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him. The Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord. And his delight, this root of Jesse, this shoot coming from the stump of Jesse, his delight shall be in the fear of the Lord, and he shall not judge by what his eyes see or decide disputes by what his ears hear. Thank God. Because we would all be worthless and there would be nothing good in this world, but with righteousness. He shall judge the poor and decide with equity for the meek of the earth, that his love and his justice will come together in righteousness, that his grace and his truth will be bound together. That there will be love and acceptance, even when there shouldn't be, but it will be coupled with truth. This is that shoot of Jesse. I love this part. It says, he shall strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, his very words, and with the breath of his lips, he shall kill the wicked. And I can't help but think of him on that cross declaring, it is finished. In that day, in verse 10, it says, the root of Jesse, who shall stand as a signal for the peoples, of him shall the nations inquire, and his resting place shall be glorious. So this is one full of glory, one who is a sign, a signal to all the peoples of the earth. That one will come. He is coming. To turn just a couple pages to the left, Isaiah 9, verses 6 and 7, kind of reminds us and gives us a little more specifics of who this one is. It says, verse 6, for to us a child is born. It's not this massive king. It's not this military, warlike king, this fighter king. No, it is a child, an infant, a humble, gentle human. To us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulders, and his name shall be called this little one, this child, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace, there will be no end. So it is a boundless kingdom. On the throne of David, remember I told you about him, and over his kingdom to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness, from this time forth and forevermore, the zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. So preparing involves, look at what has been said. There has been something stated that something small, something infant is coming. Consider what has happened. That this is something that will happen. The Lord of hosts will do this. That you must prepare him because he's coming. It's not just like it's optional. He is coming. That he will break through when he's not supposed to break through, when he's supposed to be murdered as if with infanticide, that's how you say that, infanticide, he's not even supposed to be here. That when the clouds are covering the stars at night, the light's not supposed to break through. That when there's no room in the simplest hotel, he's gonna make something happen. And you guys know the story. He's not murdered. They get out of where they need to get out of, and they come wandering and walking. Light breaks through into these fields. Shepherds see it. Even wise men from far off see it. And even though there was no room for him at that hotel or that inn, life breaks through. We've considered what's happened. We've considered what has changed. What has changed that now there is going to be a kingdom, a rule, a reign that is boundless, that will endure forever, that will be judged in both justice and righteousness. So what does this mean for you? What I was blown away with is that this happened. This wasn't optional. This isn't just a good story for kids to read in books around Christmas time. This literally took place. And that Romans 15 passage we read at the very beginning of our gathering, Paul quotes Isaiah 11 and says, again, Isaiah in verse 12, the root of Jesse will come. Even he who arises to rule the Gentiles, and in him will the Gentiles hope. You know what that means for you? That you live under the kingship and the reign of a gracious and truthful king who came as an infant, who sacrificed his life in order to save you. That is God with us. So in him we are to hope. We prepare thinking of that hope We prepare thinking back to those prophecies, looking back in the New Testament of what has been said. We prepare. John Piper, whether you agree with him or not, he says this great statement. He says, it's a season, Advent, for cherishing and worshiping this characteristic of God, that he is a searching and saving God. Let me say that again, church. Like, that's good for an amen. He is a searching and saving God. That he is a God on a mission. That he is not aloof or passive or indecisive. We prepare because we see who he is. We're beginning to understand a searching and saving God who's not indecisive. Our small group meets in our home on Monday nights, and we are reading through Advent devotional, and this stuck out to me in the first day, December 1, of reading this devotional, that Jesus knew what he was headed for. 1 Thessalonians says that he saves us from the wrath that is to come. He knew the wrath that was coming. He knew the weight of the wrath of a holy God. That holy, holy God that we just sang about, he knew about it. He knew it was coming, and yet he still would seek and save us because he could not be indecisive. That is his coming. We prepare, recognizing what was going to happen, what has happened, what has changed in this world in light of that, and what does this mean for me? Second of all, him. Prepare him. Who is this him? John 1:1-16. Again, this is something I did with our small group on Monday, and I was like, hey, that's good. I'm going to share that again on Sunday. So I want to read this. Who is this prophetic one? Who is this one in which the scriptures are pointing to? John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. I've highlighted here in yellow, who is the he? Who is the he here? That's hard to say. Who is the he here? He was in the beginning with God. This one who is coming was with God. That all things were made through him. He is the creator and sustainer of the universe. And without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life. It's not just that he's the creator, sustainer. He's the one who gives life and breath to everything. This is the one who's coming. And the life was the light of men. No longer in darkness, but drawing out, exposing what is in the shadows, in the void, and bringing it to light. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. That this one who comes, this one who is the light, cannot be overcome. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness. He's the one who would prepare the way for the Lord. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. That the one who is to come is one who could be believed upon, who could be trusted in, who could be placed faith into. He, John, was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light, the true light. This isn't a false light. The he here is not false. Thank God that we don't stand on shaky ground. He is true. He is bedrock, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. So it's not just this big idea here. He is now coming into this world. All those yellow things, those phrases you see up there, those words, all that coming together into the world. Verse 10, he was in the world and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own and his own people, Jews, did not receive him. But to all who did receive him, that he is receivable. Not just that we place our faith, but he's able to be received. This white hot light can be received. as a gift. Those who believed in his name, those who put their faith all in. As we witnessed last Sunday, Elizabeth saying that. At some point in her life, it became real to her. I'm all in with Jesus. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God, and I'm with you. Believing in his name. This is the hymn we're talking about. The one who saves. Jesus, he who saves. He gave the right to become children of God. The he who is coming gives us the right to become children of God. God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God, and the Word became flesh. He was not just in the world as a spirit, as an idea, as a principle. He came in flesh. That ought to be very empathetic sounding to you. He can feel like you feel. He can hurt like you hurt. He can laugh like you laugh. He can eat and drink just like you and me. He's one of us. He became flesh. And not only was he flesh, he dwelt among us. This is the him. This is the he that the prophecies are telling us about. The one who is coming. Prepare him room. And we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son, that he is unique. There will be no one like him before, during, or after him, and he is from the Father. And I love this part, full of grace and truth. This one who is coming knows the wrath of God is going to come upon him, becomes flesh and dwells among us. And he is full of grace and truth. Had a counselor tell me one time, in that order. In that order is how Jesus came. So for me, that changed my life as I'm preparing him room. It changed everything about me because no longer did I feel like I had to behave rightly in order to be accepted by God. No, it was grace first, which meant he loved me, he accepted me, and then he was going to deal with my stuff in my life. It radically changed who I was. It's radically changed some of you. When you have experienced the goodness and kindness of Jesus, his grace and his truth. That the woman who's caught in adultery ends up not getting killed and stoned to death because Jesus says, well, where are your accusers? They all left. They didn't have a right to stone her because they had their own junk, their own sin in their lives. They couldn't be the righteous ones. They weren't. He says, neither do I accuse you. He could have said, get your stuff together. Clean up your life. But what does he say first? He says, neither do I accuse you. In a sense, he's saying, I accept you. You don't deserve this, but I love you. I will hover over you. Now, go and sin no more. So it's not just that we neglect the truth. It's not that we neglect the ugliness or the sin, the brokenness in our lives. No, we get real about it, but we get real about it based on the grace that we've experienced. This is the one who has come. The one full of grace and truth. Prepare him room. We have seen it. Verse 16, for from his fullness, all of this that we've just shared, we have all received grace upon grace. This one who was coming brings grace upon grace upon grace as a gift. So let's go to the actual Christmas stories and begin to wrap this up. Luke 10, 8 through 12. In the same region, there were shepherds out in the field keeping watch over their flock by night, and an angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord, right, John 1 told us about it, shone around them, and they were filled with great fear. There was fear. There wasn't like excitement, joy, laughter. No, there was fear. What's about to take place? And the angel said to them, fear not, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For unto you is born this day the city of David, a Savior, going back to Isaiah 11, Isaiah 9, who is Christ, King, Reign, Lord. And this will be a sign. Remember that? There will be a signal. There will be a sign. This will be a sign for you. You will find a baby wrapped in swaddling clothes, lying in a manger. Fast forward. Fast forward, because I want you to see something. What was the response after hearing the message about this one? How did these shepherds respond? How did Mary respond? How did those that were around respond to him? Verse 15, when the angels went away, because they had some interactions with them, but we'll come back to that at Christmas time. When the angels went away from them into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go over to Bethlehem and see this thing that has happened, which the Lord has made known to us." And they went with haste and found Mary and Joseph and the baby lying in a manger. And when they saw it, they made known the saying that had been told them concerning this child. And all who heard it wondered at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured up all these things, pondering them in their heart. And the shepherds returned, glorifying, praising God for all they had heard and seen as it had been told them. What was the response to experiencing him? One, they went to see. Adrian Rogers, I look up messages every now and then from him, and he said, "Is there room for Jesus at Christmas?" And so I thought, well, that's probably fitting. And so this is not mine. This is from Adrian Rogers. There could be multiple reasons why there was no room for him at the inn. But Adrian says it could have been ignorance. They maybe just didn't know. But instead, what do the shepherds do? They go and see. We're interested. Well, what's going on here? They went to see. Number two, they wondered about him in verse 18. Maybe the innkeeper had just indifference. I don't care. Yeah, it's a poor little couple. Yeah, like some teens running around. We don't have time for that. But instead, based on the gospel message of this baby being born, they wondered. They were full of awe and wonder. Who is this one? Who is this baby? And three, they worshiped him. Verse 20 says, they returned, glorifying, praising God for all they had heard and seen. That the gospel message, the gospel baby, this good news baby, led them to worship. Maybe the innkeeper was just too busy. Adrian Rogers says, maybe they're just too busy. And here we have these shepherds all in, involved, completely captivated by who this little baby is. Prepare him, and lastly, room. What is the room that we're talking about? Are we preparing Jesus a room in the church? Are we preparing Jesus a little shrine that we're going to put in front of these steps? Are we preparing Jesus some kind of special space? In a sense, yes, we are. We're preparing room here. This Advent season, we are preparing room inside here. No, Jesus isn't here. He's in heaven. I already said that. He doesn't need our room. So don't think if Jesus doesn't have the room, he doesn't exist. No, Jesus exists in a glorified, reigning reality. And that he longs and he desires to be in the same room with you. Advent spurs us to make room in our hearts for Jesus. This is where we got to be honest, church, of who we are. Our cold, stone-like heart. Jeremiah 17:9 says that it is deceitful above all other things. That heart room, we're preparing that. Thanks be to God, we cannot do that on our own strength. We can't just paint the walls of our heart white and think that it's going to be okay. No, we have a cold heart of stone that is in need of surgery. And that's what Jesus came to give his life for. that surgery could be done and that a new heart could be given us. Look at Ezekiel. It says, I will give you a new heart. You and I, we need a new heart. Yes, Christmas is about new hearts. We are preparing for the one who is to come, because when he comes, things are going to change. And when things change, all of our life is going to be forever affected. And we will need a new heart because of the sin, nature, and deceitfulness that we have. We need a new heart. I'll give you a new heart, a new spirit. I'll remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh, a heart that is new. That's the room we're talking about. The him who was not made room for in Bethlehem changed everything, and let every heart prepare him room, because it is so easy to miss him. And that sounds crazy to us, right? Because we're on this side of the cross and we're on this side of the Bible translation. Like, we have it here. And yet, every Christmas, it's still easy to miss Jesus, right? Someone said this: the real Christmas was nothing like the Christmas we've come to know, with its traditions, memories, legends. The real Christmas was a desperate moment for a desperate reason. We were in desperate need of a new heart. And this baby went through all of the chaos of Christmas to enter here. So we now know what that desperation is. That sinners are under the wrath of a holy God. And yet this baby would be a sign, a signal to all nations that salvation from that wrath would be possible. And not only possible, but that salvation had come. And you have this little girl, teenage girl, treasuring up all these things, pondering them in her heart. She's not perfect. We don't worship Mary. We don't celebrate Mary, but she is someone we should pay attention to. She made room for Jesus. She was blown away by the him who had come. Don't let the busyness of the holiday season fill up your inns and there be no room left for him. Instead, make room for Jesus this Christmas. Let's pray together. As your heads are bowed there, and I just want to bring us to a time of reflection, because we are going to take communion together and sing a song. I love what Adrian Rogers said. If you just listen to, let me share this. He says, if you want to find Jesus, you'll never find him in the inn. You'll never find him as an insider. You'll always find Jesus on the outside. Don't go to the inn. Go to the stable. Don't go inside the city. Go outside the city where they crucified him. That's where Jesus is. That's where Jesus was. And now, because of his resurrection, he's no longer there. He is the one who has come and the one who will come again. He welcomes outsiders. He welcomes those with cold, stone-like hearts. So let every heart prepare him room. Maybe you're dealing with darkness this Christmas. In this time of reflection, you might be feeling alone. You might be hurt. It may be everything within you to even hear me talk this morning, because it's stirring up some emotions or old memories. And I'm not here to make this emotional. I'm just here to be honest. You might be feeling that way. Well, that girl that night, I'm sure she felt very similar. Afraid. Sad. In pain. In the dark. One of the great commentaries ever written says, "It is a matter of comfort to us when things are at the darkest. He who forms the light and darkness has appointed their bounds and has set one over against the other. He can say, hitherto the dimness shall go, and no further, no longer." In other words, there is light in your darkness. And that light has pierced into the world as flesh and dwelt among us. He's the only Son of God from the Father, full of grace and truth. And because of who He is and what He has done this Christmas, you can experience goodness and kindness when you prepare Him room. In just a moment, we're going to take communion together. In a sense, you'll be preparing your heart. Are you ready to remember the body of Jesus being broken for you and the blood of Jesus being poured out and shed for you? This is for baptized believers, those who believe that Jesus is who He says He is and that Jesus came to seek and save the lost. My friend, maybe your response today is to come to Jesus. Sincerely, maybe for the first time, to receive that salvation He's offering. It's a gift. Maybe your response today is to say, you know what? I believe Jesus, but I've never told people about it. I've never been baptized. I want people to know about it. Well, I want to talk to you about that. Elizabeth came to that realization in her own life. She didn't need me or anyone else to tell her that. God revealed that to her. Maybe your response this morning is to give cheerfully to the Lord. Yes, giving of your resources to God's work in this world, to worship Him by giving. You can do that on our website. There's a black box in the lobby. Maybe your response this morning is to take communion genuinely with us and to sing joyfully as you head out today. I'm not here to manipulate you or anyone. I'm just here because of the goodness of God in my own life. And that goodness of God has come in the form of a baby born, to die for sinners. And that's you and me. So prepare Him room, and then I'll walk us through communion.
Thank you for listening to audio from Cornerstone Church, located in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Feel free to make copies of this message to give to others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission. For more information about Cornerstone Church, please visit us online at www.cornerstonefsm.church.